Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories, along with Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Abul Kalam sits cross-legged on the floor of his small home and quietly says prayers into a small plastic bottle filled with water. Kalam says he is creating a potion that will cure stomach pain. He says, "I got these powers in my dreams. People come to me because I heal them." Kalam is a faith healer, or Boidu in the local language. For many years, he has been treating Rohingya Muslims, first in Myanmar's Rakhine State, and now at a camp in Bangladesh. Last year, about 700,000 Rohingya took refuge in the camp after escaping a campaign of government violence at home. Faith healers have long been sought out in Rohingya society to treat physical and mental conditions. Their business has survived in part because of traditional beliefs and partly because Rohingya rarely receive modern medical care in Myanmar, which has a Buddhist majority. They are considered one of the most persecuted minority groups in the world. Medical care has improved in Bangladesh. Thousands of aid workers there offer Rohingya everything from vaccinations to mental health support. Doctors Without Borders operates 4 hospitals and 12 medical centers along the border between Bangladesh and Myanmar. The group says it has provided help to 800,000 patients and admitted another 15,000 patients to hospitals since August 2017. Yet many Rohingya still want their faith healers. 60-year-old Kalam is a faith healer who arrived in Bangladesh in 2012. He says he receives more than 5 patients each day. He says, "People come to me because they benefit from my power. That's why they keep coming back." Myanmar officials have announced plans to begin bringing Rohingya back to Myanmar this week. Some rights groups have criticized the move. They say it is not yet safe in Rakhine State for the Rohingya. Anita Saha is a mental health worker who has worked in the camps since August 2017. She says Rohingya refugees' dependence on faith healers comes from a lack of understanding of science and doctors. Saha says many refugees mistakenly believe they will lose their Islamic faith and become Christians if they take vaccinations for diseases. And in the case of mental conditions, she says, many believe it is caused by evil forces and can be healed with prayer. They believe in the Boidus to overcome their problem, Saha says. She says beliefs in the camps are slowly changing. Alinessa has never known what is wrong with her teenage daughter. She spends her day lying on the floor of her family's shelter in the refugee camp. She is unable to talk, walk, or eat on her own. Nessa says her daughter has been this way since she was 3 years old. At that time, she experienced epileptic seizures for nearly 2 weeks. Nessa says, I don't know if her disease is due to an evil spirit or because of difficulty in breathing. If this is because of an evil spirit, then only a Boydu can treat her. If it is a breathing problem, then a doctor may be able to help her. Nessa says none of the many Boydus she has visited has been able to help her daughter, and she is losing her faith in them. She is now interested in seeking medical help. Climate extremes and unhealthy conditions make the camps a good place for diseases to spread and people to develop mental health problems. That means there is plenty of work for doctors. It also means there is plenty of business for faith healers like Kalam, who does not care if people do not believe in his powers. He says, I can't be worried by what people have to say. Maybe the doctor will say, what does a Boydu know? I don't want to answer them. I don't need to fight them.
This is what's trending today. The European Union's highest court has dismissed an attempt by a Dutch cheesemaker to copyright its cream cheese. The ruling means that a person or company cannot legally own the taste of food and prevent others from copying it. Dutch company Levola Hengelo makes a cheese spread called Hexenkaas, or witch's cheese. The company claimed that cheesemaker Smilde copied its product with another cheese spread called Witte Vrouwenkaas, or white women's cheese. So Levola took its competitor to court. The company said the competitor's cheese was a copy of its product and violated its copyright of the cheese's taste. The Dutch court asked for guidance from the European Court of Justice, or ECJ. The ECJ judges said, the taste of a food product is not eligible for copyright protection. They said, unlike works of writing, photography, movies, and music, the taste of a food cannot be identified with precision and objectivity. The judges added that the taste of food depends on personal taste and experience. This is not the first time that the court had to rule on a dispute about food. Last July, the ECJ ruled that Nestle could not trademark the four-finger shape of its Kit Kat chocolate bars. Michelle Wildenborg of Levola disagreed with the cheese ruling. He said, we find it a pity and incorrect that the creative expression in food and perfumes do not have copyright protection, and that everyone can make a copy of it. And that's what's trending today.
For nearly 130 years, the world's scientists have used a singular small metal cylinder to define the exact weight of a kilogram. But that is about to change. The cylinder was made in 1889 of platinum and iridium metals. It is called the Grand K. The International Bureau of Weights and Measures, or BIPM, keeps the object at its headquarters near Paris. many safeguards protect the Grand Cay. In fact, it takes three specially chosen people to open the container that holds the cylinder. They must each release separate locks at exactly the same time to do so. The Grand Cay has served as the official world measurement tool for weight in kilograms. All modern mass measurements have been based on the Grand Cay. There are seven main units of official measure. These include the meter for length and the second for time. Other units measure things like electrical current or amounts of a substance. Currently, the kilogram is the only measure based on a physical object. The meter used to be represented by a singular metal stick. In 1983, scientists decided that a meter would be defined by the speed of light. Light speed is constant. Light always takes the same amount of time to travel 1 meter. The Grand Cay was only rarely and always extremely carefully removed so that other kilos sent from around the world could be compared to it. But even such rare contact does not fully protect the Grand Cay and its mass. It is still affected by its environment. This can be a problem when using it as the single exact weight measurement tool. Ian Robinson is an engineering specialist at Britain's National Physical Laboratory. He told Reuters that pollutants in the atmosphere can easily add weight to the historic measuring tool. "When you just get it out of the vault, it's slightly dirty," Robinson said. "But the whole process of cleaning or handling or using the mass can change its mass." Now, officials at the BIPM believe the time is right to change the kilogram standard to make it fit better in today's technology-driven world. So, on November 16th, scientists from around the world will gather in Paris to approve replacing the Grand Cay with a new standard. BIPM's director, Martin Milton, told the Associated Press he does not see the event as a sad development, but as a moment of celebration. He says this is because it will be the last world measurement standard to finally be replaced by new innovation. The Grand Cay is to be replaced by a new definition based on a complex physics formula called Planck's constant. This process can measure the mass of an object using electromagnetic force. The method will permit scientists to correctly measure an exact kilogram without comparing it directly with the weight of a physical object. Milton says changes in drug and chemical production now require new ways to measure much smaller amounts of material. He says a kilo is fine for weighing things like potatoes, where extreme exactness is not necessary. But it's not the right weight for many applications in demanding science and industry, he said. Scientists have spent years developing the new definition to make sure the change goes smoothly. Although the time has finally come to change the Grand Cay, Milton says the system has served humanity well and proved man's ability to unite for science. It's been called a great work of peace, actually, because it's one of the areas where all of the states of the world come together with absolutely the same objective. I'm Brian Lynn.
We turn now to the making of a nation. Yesterday, we talked about the visits to the New World by Christopher Columbus and other explorers sailing for Spain and Portugal. Today, Steve Ember tells the story of the first permanent English settlements in North America.
England was the first country to compete with Spain for claims in the New World. Queen Elizabeth I supported explorations as early as the 1570s. Sir Humphrey Gilbert led the first English settlement efforts, but he did not establish any lasting settlement. He died as he was returning to England. Gilbert's half-brother, Sir Walter Raleigh, continued his work. Raleigh sent a number of ships to explore the east coast of North America. He named an area of the coast Virginia in honor of Queen Elizabeth, who never married and was known as the Virgin Queen. In 1585, about 100 men settled on Roanoke Island off the coast of the present-day state of North Carolina. These settlers returned to England a year later. Another group went to Roanoke the next year. This group included a number of women and children. But the supply ships that Raleigh sent to the colony failed to arrive. When help got there in 1590, none of the settlers could be found. At least some of the settlers may have become part of the Indian tribe that lived in the area. One reason for the delay in getting supplies to Roanoke was the attack of the Spanish Navy against England in 1588. King Philip of Spain had decided to invade England, but the small English ships, combined with a fierce storm, defeated the huge Spanish fleet. As a result, Spain was no longer able to block English exploration. England discovered that supporting colonies so far away cost a lot of money. So Queen Elizabeth took no more action to do it. Not until after her death in 1603 did England begin serious efforts to start colonies in America. In 1606, the new English king, James I, gave two business groups permission to establish colonies in Virginia, the area claimed by England. Companies were organized to carry out the move. The London Company sent 100 settlers to Virginia in 1606. The group landed there in May 1607 and founded Jamestown. It was the first permanent English colony in the New World. The colony seemed about to fail from the start. The settlers did not plant their crops in time, so they soon had no food. Their leaders lacked the farming and building skills needed to survive on the land. More than half the settlers died during the first winter. The businessmen controlling the colony from London knew nothing about living in such a wild place. They wanted the settlers to search for gold and explore local rivers in hopes of finding a way to the east. One settler knew this was wrong. His name was Captain John Smith. He helped the colonists build houses and grow food by learning from the local Indians. Still, the Jamestown settlers continued to die each year from disease, starvation, and Indian attacks. The London Company sent 6,000 settlers to Virginia between 1606 and 1622. More than 4,000 died during that time. Historians say that all the settlers surely would have died without the help of the local Powhatan Indians. The Indians gave the settlers food. They taught them how to live in the forest. And the Powhatan Indians showed the settlers how to plant new crops and how to clear the land for building. The settlers accepted the Indians' help. Then, however, the settlers took whatever else they wanted by force. In 1622, the local Indians attacked the settlers for interfering with Indian land. 340 settlers died. The colonists answered the attack by destroying the native tribes living along Virginia's coast. The settlers recognized that they would have to grow their own food and survive on their own without help from England or anyone else. The Jamestown colony was clearly established by 1624. It was even beginning to earn money by growing and selling a new crop, tobacco. The other early English settlements in North America were much to the north, in what is today the state of Massachusetts. The people who settled there left England for reasons different than those who settled in Jamestown. The Virginia settlers were looking for ways to earn money for English businesses. The settlers in Massachusetts were seeking religious freedom. King Henry VIII of England had separated from the Roman Catholic Church. His daughter, Queen Elizabeth, established the Protestant faith in England. It was called the Church of England or the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church, however, was similar to the Roman Catholic Church. Not all Protestants liked this idea. Some wanted to leave the Anglican Church and form religious groups of their own. In 1606, members of one group in the town of Scrooby did separate from the Anglican Church. About 125 people left England for Holland. They found problems there too, so they decided to move again to the New World. These people were called pilgrims. Pilgrims are people who travel for religious reasons. About 35 pilgrims were among the 102 passengers and crew on a ship called the Mayflower in 1620. The Mayflower set sail from England, headed for Virginia. But the ship never reached Virginia. It was blown far off its planned course. Instead, it reached land far to the north on Cape Cod Bay. The group decided to stay there instead of trying to find Jamestown far to the south in Virginia. They settled what would become the Massachusetts Bay Colony. They called the colony Plymouth, naming it after the harbor in England from which they departed on their voyage to the New World. The Pilgrims and the others aboard the Mayflower believed they were not under English control since they did not land in Virginia. They saw the need for rules that would help them live together peacefully. They wrote a plan of government, which they called the Mayflower Compact. It was the first such plan ever developed in the New World. They elected William Bradford as the first governor of the Plymouth Colony. We know about the first 30 years of the colony, as William Bradford described it in his book of Plymouth Plantation. It is also sometimes referred to as William Bradford's Journal. It actually tells the story of the Pilgrims from 1608, when they settled in the Netherlands through the Mayflower voyage until the year 1647. It ends with a list, written in 1650, of Mayflower passengers and what happened to them. As happened in Jamestown, about half the settlers in Plymouth died during the first winter. The survivors were surprised to find an Indian who spoke English. His name was Squanto. He had been kidnapped by an English sea captain and had lived in England before returning to his people. The Pilgrims believed God had sent them Squanto. He made it possible for them to communicate with the native people. He showed them the best places to fish, what kind of crops to plant, and how to grow them. He provided them with all kinds of information they needed to survive. The settlers invited the Indians to a feast in the month of November to celebrate their successes and to thank Squanto for his help. Americans remember this feast when they celebrate the holiday of Thanksgiving Day in November. Other English settlers began arriving in the area now called New England. One large group was the Puritans. Like the Pilgrims, the Puritans disagreed with the Anglican Church, but they did not want to leave the Church. The Puritans wanted to change it, to make it more holy in their view. Their desire for this change made them unwelcome in England. The first ship carrying Puritans left England for America in 1630. By the end of that summer, 1,000 Puritans had landed in the Northeast. Charles, the new English king, had given permission for them to settle in the Massachusetts Bay area. The Puritans began leaving England in large groups. Between 1630 and 1640, 20,000 sailed for New England. They risked their lives on the dangerous trip. They wanted to live among people who believed as they did. The Puritans and other Europeans, however, found a very different people already living in the New World. They were the Native Americans, or Indians, as Columbus called them, after thinking he had reached the East.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.